Harold is such a blessing. I got to know Harold because Harold is Braden Somm's sponsor through AA. And when I first sat down with him, he's like, "Are you the preacher?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Get in my car." And he gave me a sermon. But it was great. I heard his story in about, 15, 20 minutes time. And I was like, "Wow, dude, that's a powerful story." And God is using Harold in a mighty, mighty way. Some of you are here who know the blessing that he's been in your life. But I thought maybe to introduce Harold real quick, I'd have Braden come up and just introduce Harold, and then Harold can come up and share his story. Here, let's get Braden a mic. Where's that mic?
I probably don't need one.
No, it'll be good because we've got it on video. So here you go, Connor.
Hey, guys. Okay, so Harold is... he's somebody who's loved and respected in the recovery community. Certainly someone I love and respect. He was assigned to me as a sponsor. I was assigned to him. And he's taken me through all 12 steps in the past 6 months. If you know anything about Harold, it's service. And he'll be there. I don't care what time you call, text, he's there for you. He's kind, loving, he's honest, and he's someone that I admire a lot. And I'm glad that he's here to tell a story. That give it to Harold.
I believe, whether you believe it or not, don't matter, because I believe it, And that's the thing about coincidences, because my life is full of coincidences. One here, without a whole bunch of coincidences, Drew and I would have never met. But I believe coincidences are miracles in which God chooses to remain anonymous. You've heard the anonymous thing a few times. There's this tradition that I can't tell you what I'm in, but you've heard the word, so I'm pretty sure you could figure it out at some point, right? I had a great life starting out, Catholic schools, private schools, dad's there for everything, mom, they stayed together till the day they died. Don't have that part of the story where everything was messed up. I still went sideways. Throughout high school, I decided to become, I'm from New Orleans originally, So that's a great place to go to boot camp to become an alcoholic. And I drank and I drank and I drank. I don't fit in anywhere, but I found a way to cope. If I put alcohol on top of anything, I become bigger. I become stronger. I become cuter. I can dance, I can sing, so I can deal with life on life's terms in that way. But that's not dealing with life on life's terms, that's covering everything up. He told me to, I gotta put the hurry up on this, but let's just say I got a couple DUIs and decided to destroy my life as much as I could at that point. I married this girl from New York. I had gotten sober in New York and then married this girl. She finally said yes, and life was great. We moved back to New Orleans. Everything's good. She got a job in Atlanta. By the way, she's a federal law enforcement officer. This is going to come in handy a little later. So she's doing her thing, and they said there's this opportunity. It came open in Atlanta, Assistant special agent in charge. More money. I'm just a carpenter. I can carpenter anywhere. So we pack everything up and we come to Atlanta. Everything's great. Everything's running good. I'm good. I'm okay. We decide later on, life's good. I got my own business. We've got two houses, got the cars, she pops out a couple kids, and life's good. Then I take an injury. And, I had an injury in which they cut me from here to here. I guess it's an injury. And they took out all my guts, threw them on a table, took out the bad parts, shoved them back in. At that point in time, I found out what Mr. Loratab is. Loratab is a pain-relieving drug that you get prescribed by the doctor. I'm prescribed by the doctor. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not a junkie. I can take these pills. Woo, they feel good. I can work harder, I can work longer, I can work stronger. All of a sudden, then I get an injury in my shoulder and I have to go and I get surgery on it. Doctor gives me these pills. Woo! I'm good. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not a drug addict. Doctor's prescribing these pills. I am all good. Everything is great with this. Everything is as it should be. You know, they make these things called inboxes, and you know, and progressively I get worse and worse on the pills, but the doctor's free. You know, I got pain here, doc, this knee, this. All the excuses in the world, and a doctor that just writes scripts. Well, I started running out a little early, you know, because, I mean, he only regs me, you know, enough for three people for a month. And I started running out early. And then I find out there's these guys called street pharmacists that you can go to, and you can buy them from the street pharmacist. That's a drug dealer for you good people. So I go, and I buy them from him. Well, the doctor's prescribing it. I just ran out. I needed a few more. Yep. See how I bullied myself? There's one. Right? I totally lie to myself. I'm unreal with myself. I will believe my own stuff all the time. Yeah. Well, I mean, the doctor's prescribing them. This is what the doctor prescribed. Just because I'm taking 10 times as many as what the doctor prescribed, it's okay. The doctor prescribed it. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not a drug addict. Yeah. Then one day I ran out, couldn't get any, and I was dead in the bed. It's called withdrawal. You know, when you take that many pills and you suddenly stop, it's not a fun experience. I needed these pills to survive. I didn't know what to do. Went to the doctor, told him about, he said, you got a problem with the pills. I said, okay, great. You know, I got a problem with the pills. Give me more pills. He said, no, I ain't giving you no more. Legally, I can't give you no more. You know? So the street pharmacist says, that's still the drug dealer. Street pharmacist says, I got something else for you that's going to be end up being a little cheaper for you. You know, you got this thing called heroin, right? All you do is smell a little bit and you'll be fine. You know, love the smell of heroin. Still kind of bullshit with myself, but I know I'm in trouble at this point. At any point in this story, I could have stopped. I know the answer. I've already gotten sober through a 12-step program of recovery. I already know what the answer is. I know it all the time. I got a pride and ego this big. I'm not going to ask for help. I'm going to do this on my own. Several rehabs, you know, doing these steps, but trying to do them without this God. Down the hill we go. I find methamphetamines, I find cocaine, I find all of them. And I decided that I love them all. You know, one night I decided I had enough. I had enough of this life. I don't want to play this game anymore. And, you know, I had a buddy of mine, he overdosed, right? I knew how much he put in his needle, he overdosed. I took twice as much, put it in my needle. I'm done with this life. I'm ready for the next one. I went to sleep, figuring it'd be done, but no. Woke up the next day. Have no idea why or how. Probably all the methamphetamines that were in there. So down the tubes I go. Remember I told you she was federal law enforcement? I went to jail. Guess how I got there? She found she found me passed out. Called the police, got concerned, called police and the ambulance. And they do what they do, and away to jail I went. After jail, right, I come out and we try to do the rehab thing. You know, I'd be able to get it, become a great guy again, fall. Become a great guy again, fall. Why? There's no God in it yet. She had enough of my almost got me. She had enough of me. And this woman had to protect herself and my children from me. No one can protect me from me, but she was strong enough to protect herself and my children from me. She kicked me out of the house. My response is, woohoo, I can do whatever I want to do. Yeah. They say God gave me self-will. I have totally bastardized self-will. My self-will had me living in a car, doing whatever I want, lying, cheating, stealing, whatever I had to do to get what I needed to get through the day, which was basically at this point, drugs, drugs, and more drugs. I own that business, that's gone, house is gone, I'm out. I'm basically homeless living in a car. At some point I realized this is horrible. This is, I can't get straight. My head's out. My head just talks to me and tells me what a piece of junk I am. And the only way it can shut up is when I'm high and passed out. I know a better life. I've lived a better life.
Yeah.
I tell you, I love my kids. Yes, I love my kids. I love dope more. I've done things that you shouldn't do. Driving 80 miles an hour down the highway, injecting myself with heroin while the children are in the backseat. I love my kids, but I love the dope more. I had to have it. It wasn't a choice at this point. It was a necessity. So again, I make this decision. I'm tired of this life. I'm ready for the next one. Here comes some of the big coincidences in life. Right. I'm tired of this life. I'm ready for the next one. I'm going to go get them. I'm going to go get a full bag, and I'm putting it all in one needle, and I'm done. That's it. There ain't going to be no oops this time.
Yeah.
I am going to overpower God's will. Yeah, right. I'm going to overpower God's will this time, because last time he woke me up. This was not the choice I made. So I'm going, I'm almost to where I need to be, and I'm sitting in Snellville. And I'm at a red light. And a cop pulls up behind me. It's okay, the car's car's in the ex-wife's name. Yeah, insurance in her name, no problem. You know, it's gonna come back to a federal law enforcement officer. I'm just gonna drive on. And the light won't change. And the cop's back there typing on a computer. Now, we ain't allowed to use cell phone. This it's got a whole laptop. That. Right? You know, as soon as the light changes, woo! Yeah. Why'd you pull me over? Oh, that little light on the back of the car is out. Yeah, but why you really bother? Damn, three. Four. Yeah, why'd you pull it up? Oh, I got four over here. He's got a clicker. We're going to go to the videotape, Bob. Anyway. Yeah. So he pulls me over. I'm like, why, come on now. That ain't the real reason why. He says, there's a warrant out for your arrest. How do you figure that out? You know, it's not my name. You know, I said, Mr. Shettall, there are four people in the state of Georgia with the last name Shettall. And the other three are female. Yeah. It was pretty easy to figure out. Now, in all fairness, this man picked me up at my lowest point, treated me with respect, well, as much respect as you can have with your hands cuffed behind your back, put me in the back of his car, and I could see empathy on his face. At this point in my life, I am so low. He says, who do you want to call? I had to think about it for a minute. I don't know who's going to take my call at anymore. No one wants to talk to me anymore because I'm always trying to get something from you. Yeah. I'm not a giver. I'm a taker. Nobody. Let's call the ex-wife. Let's call the wife, right? Hey, hon, cops got me. I'm going to jail. Okay, bye. Have fun. Click. Did enough time in jail to have a dog in my cell. Do a little thinking. Get far enough away from the dope. You know, there's a coincidence. I'm going to kill myself. And a cop catches me out of blue thin air. I've been riding dirty for so long, and now, this day, this time, 24 hours later, we wouldn't have had this conversation. We call it God doing for me what I can't do for myself, right? So God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. He put me in this jail. I really wanted to recover. I wanted to get better, and that while I was really high as hell, does that count? Anyway, I went to this rehab to go check it out. Right? And you know, it's rehab with a weird name and stuff and purple. And I went to this rehab, and this guy treated me with respect and dignity, knowing that I was just blasted. Showed me around, gave me a big hug, said, you come on, we're ready for you. Yeah. Cody, dude's this freaking tall. I wasn't ready yet. Yeah. But I'm sitting in that jail cell. You know, I toured a few rehabs. Hell, I've been to a bunch of them. I'm going out. They finally take me out to stand in front of the judge, and my mind is so mangled I can only remember one thing. Judge asked me, where do you want to go? You can either stay in here and go to prison, or you can go to rehab. Only thing I could think of was that stupid-ass name, Purple. So I go to purple. And it's an active recovery lifestyle. You see the gray in my beard. I only got 7 years sober. I was old. Active recovery lifestyle means you run, you jump, you play, you jump off of cliffs and stuff. I got COPD. I got a lung problem. I can't climb. I can't run. I can't jump. Well, they make you do it anyway. I learned that I can do hard things. I found God in the mountains. I find God in waterfalls. So we fast forward, and I got to find this guy. You know, NAA, if I read the book, I am not going to read the book the way the book is supposed to be read. I will put my mental twist on it and screw everything up. So I need a sponsor guy to tell me how to read the book and how to do steps, because I, in my own way, I will mess them up. Now, understand that I firmly believe that there are several books that have been written by the hand of God, right? I believe that the book that we use, God wrote it while Bill Wilson held the pen, because there's no way at 2 years sober I could have wrote anything close to this, to be so perfect that for the past 100 years, millions and millions of people have recovered through a largely, you know, a largely spiritual program, right? So I got to get this sponsor, dude. I got this guy. He says, I'm living my life beyond my wildest dreams. You're the dude. And he's a Yankee. Anyway. And Yankee coffee bagger. But so he takes me through the steps. When we go through the steps, there's a whole bunch of things. Like the first word of the first step is we. That means I don't have to do things on my own anymore. We were powerless over alcohol, and that our lives were unmanageable, right? So right there, it tells me that I have no power. And it's pretty obvious how I manage my own life. You know, I either got brought to that rehab by one of the owners of the rehab, or one of the workers of the rehab, or I went in chains. Either way, I was getting there. Yeah. So we really didn't have any problem with the life being unmanageable. Well, I kind of wanted to say that I was managing okay, you know, but yeah. A good sponsor will dispel that theory real quick, right? Step two, you know, talks about higher power and insanity. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. First of all, I got to admit that I'm insane. And we believe that no human power is going to help us. Nothing human will help us. Not the judge, not the jails, not the rehabs, not the church, not the preacher, not, no, and I've proven every one of those theories. I tried every way in the world, but going back to a 12-step spiritual program to get right. So no human power can save me, so I need an invisible, almighty Superman. Right? So I come to believe that God actually gives a shit about me. Can y'all tell I speak in front of a bunch of junkies all the time? Oh, you know, I'm trying, guys. I'm trying. Oh, you know, so I got to find super invisible guy. He's got to worry about me. Why does something that powerful care about me? We're back to the same thing when I started here. The first words out of my mouth is, I don't feel worthy. I never feel worthy of anything. So I have to believe that something that I've tried for years every other way, trying to give up doing, you know, drugs and alcohol, because I know that's a better life without it. And I have to believe that this thing's going to help me. That God's going to actually care enough. Yeah. Then I have to turn my will and my life over to his care. What that means is I don't get to make the decisions anymore. In the beginning, I trusted another man, sponsor dude, to make the decisions for me. Why? Because number one, he's got no skin in my game. He doesn't want anything from me. I don't pay him. He gives me the biggest resource and the most valuable thing he has in his life, time. Time is the only thing. I don't know how much of it I have, and when it's done, it's done. If I choose to give you some, it's out of love. And then, when, you know, Drew had talked a little bit about the confession of sins. You know, our fourth step, you know, in this program is that I got to write down all of all of the bad stuff that I did in my life, right? I got to make an inventory. I got to make a sex inventory. I got to talk about everybody I'm mad at. I got to talk about, you know, all the things that I've done. And then I got to write them all on paper. And, you know, me and my sponsor are going to sit down and we're going to look for patterns. And then we're going to confess them to God. It's me, him, and God. God already knows what I did. So my sponsor is just a witness. It's really me and God. Because I got a God-sized hole in me. And I've been taking drugs, alcohol, sex, anything I could. And I've been filling up this God-sized hole for so long with everything but God that I need to clear it out and make room for God to come into my life, right? You know, I like simple things. Somebody explained it to me that simply. I use it. I run with it, right? So the confession goes, you know, the confession goes and we leave it to God. And then we go meditate and pray on it after. And it, because I mean, I wrote notebooks. I mean, pages and pages. Because when I think about my life, right, I can only think of one, maybe two things at a time. When I write them down and look at page after page after page of things I've done, you know, it's quite motivating for a change. All in the name of changing how I feel. Because I don't want to, I don't feel comfortable in my own skin. I don't want to do life on life's terms. So in this process, I'm learning a new way to live, you know, a God-conscious way, you know, because this is a spiritual program, like I said, but I don't have anything. I mean, if anything, the best I got is God's pissed at me because he keeps screwing me over. I mean, made me a junkie, made my wife kick me out, you made me homeless, put me in jail. Wait a minute. All those things led up to saving my life time and time again. Maybe he does have a plan. Maybe the plan is righteous. Maybe I should just do what I'm told for a little while. Yeah. So we do 4 and 5. 6 and 7 start talking about character defects. Yeah. Yeah. We talk about shortcomings. We take these character defects and we list out some of them. But I can't tell my character defects. So sponsor dude makes me go ask 10 people. Give me 3 character defects. You want your feelings hurt? Do that. If your friends and loved ones are honest, it hurts. And you want to fight back. It's like, but it's what they see. What they see is what I project. What I project is what I am. I'm egotistical. I'm angry. Yeah. Okay. So now what do I do with these things? I've got these things. Well, I can't do anything about it. I can't fix a broke mind with a broke mind. So the 7th step is I have to ask God to remove these things from me. And I don't get to pick which one he's going to work on first. Now, let me tell you a little bit about something. If you're impatient, don't pay for patience. Pay for patience. It's a learned skill. You pray for patience, you're going to be standing behind a dude in the checkout line that's going to have 16 things. You're going to be behind the slowest driver. You're going to be, because patience is learned. And God's a good teacher. I don't pray for patience anymore. I made that mistake once. Mm-mm. You know. But what happens is, you know, God removes these defects of character by allowing me to see them when I'm in them and stop them. Right? So I can stop some of these defects of character. Some of them have served me well. Anger served me real well. Probably a survival thing. You know. Now we get down to the 8th step. How am I doing? All right. We get down to the 8th step, right? Because I have done a lot of harm when I was drinking and using. You know, I get right and I tend to not make as many mistakes. I still screw up. I still screw up today. You know, thank God. But I have to write down everything all the way. Who do I owe? The biggest one that I hate. Paying and still paying is the IRS, but I pay taxes today. Ah. All right, I'm not quite honest with that, but you know, so I got to write down everybody I've harmed, and make amends to them, right? So I'm writing down all these lists, and there are people on this list that I've done some real dirt to, Yeah, my ex-wife, my children, my father, institutions, organizations, friends, family, loved ones. If I stole something from them, I got to pay it back. This is a ninth step. I have to clean what we call cleaning my side of the street, right? I have to go. Apologies don't mean nothing. I apologize for a long time. Apologies don't mean anything. Words coming out of my mouth don't mean anything. I'm a liar. I'm a cheater. I'm a thief. Right? I've done it for so long, nobody's going to trust me when I got, hey, look, I got 6 months. I'm sorry. Everything's good. No, it doesn't work that way. I've been screwing these people over for years. They want to see some action. Right? Yeah. So if I owed you money, I paid it back. Yeah. I made a payment plan. I did whatever. Yeah. The hardest ones to pay back are the ones like my ex-wife, you know, telling her, you know, I've done all of you. The things she doesn't know about, I'm not allowed to harm her with. The adulteries and things like that, she does not. I got to carry that one alone. I'm not allowed to hurt another person to save my ass. Right? So I got to carry those alone. And don't y'all tell them I'm coming fine. But... Yeah, but the hardest one is when they says, well, I just want you to stay sober and be a dad. She just made me commit to a lifelong amends that I must. If I'm really sorry, there must be a change in behavior. I asked her, what can I do to make this right? And she told me to keep doing what I'm doing for the rest of my life. She doesn't realize she did it, but that's what she did. Trust is hard earned, you know. One of the best quotes I've ever heard is, trust is lost in buckets and gained in thimbles. I'm in purple when I got my divorce papers. I made sure that these divorce, you know, fought back and forth and things, and I made sure that I got some visits. Well, she kind of controlled the visits. Remember, I'm a 13-time felon, so probation at the time. So in order to go to New Orleans, first thing I got to do is go to probation. I got to ask them permission. I got to pee in a cup. They got to check the cup. Then I got to go ahead and my ex-wife says, no, that ain't good enough. You're going to pee in a, you know, I go to rehab. I pee in a cup. The owner calls, says he's clean. I drive to New Orleans. I get there. She has me pee in a cup. I broke this woman. She don't trust me. And she shouldn't. With her most valuable assets, her children? Yeah. Then I get a supervised visit, and then I get to go. Right? So then I come back, and probation makes you pee in a cup, from rehab makes you pee in a cup. I mean, for 6 months after I got out of rehab, I had to pee in a cup. Wait. Yeah. Step 10. Right? Step 10 is more like a maintenance step, right? If I do something wrong, fix it right now. If I do something wrong, I need to fix it right now. If I wrong you, I need to make it right as quickly as I can. Why? Because I don't want it to pile up all over again and have to do another 4 and 5. Mm-hmm. 11, you know, I mean, 10's continue to take personal inventory. When we're wrong, promptly admit it. So at night, before my head goes down, before I thank God for giving me the day of life, I need to make sure that there's no splinter in my mind saying, well, I wish you wouldn't have done that. And if there is, then I need to go fix it. 11 says I need to sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. What that means is that we talk about a fourth dimension, and the fourth dimension being the spiritual realm. You know, God's always been there. He's a constant, right? But what I see and where I see him has changed throughout. I see him in more and more places and more people. I mean, you know how many coincidences had to come together for me and this fool to get together? I mean, a lot. And then for the rehab, the guys that, I mean, they don't assign people. I don't know. I think this is the first time that someone's been assigned to someone else. Y'all, coincidence. Right. You know? Yeah, and step 12, it tells me that I have to pass on what I've learned, that I can't just take it and steal it. You know, that I must be of service. If someone called, like, you know, this is not what I wanted to be doing on Sunday morning. Okay? But when I'm called to be of service in something that has recovery related, when something that I don't know if I'm here to help y'all or me. I don't know if I'm here for my own spiritual growth or if somebody in here needs to hear what I'm saying. I don't know. So that's what we do. We try and help each other as best we can. I try to be the best person. Now, fast forward to today. I'm just going to tell you what it's like because I'm running. I know I'm running out of time. And, you know, and I like to hear me talk. You know, today my life looks a lot different. I have a key to my dad's house. My sisters let me come in the house. They're not worried about me passing, you know, dying in the bathroom from an overdose. I get to hang out with my nieces and my nephews. They're not scared to let me be with them. My ex-wife, she stole my ex, but we hella friends. She will bend the sun, moon, and stars. She will make changes in her schedule and everything if I can find a way to get into New Orleans to make sure I have the kids. She doesn't ask where we're going. I get the kids, you know, for like Father's Day and stuff. And it's not where y'all going. It's like, here, bye. I mean, those little girls actually want to be with me. You know, they go, Daddy, can we spend extra time up there? I don't know what your mama say. My mama said, get the hell out. You know, I have a group of men that love me and I love them. And it's real. It's not like, you know, when we're out there, you know, hey, I love you because you have a dog. You know, it's just we get there if we go and we show up for each other. You know, because this is not something I could do alone. I need a tribe to raise me and I need God to help us do it. So I think I'm going to be done with that. Yeah.
I think you guys experienced what I've experienced with Harold. Is it's funny because he says, I'm not a church guy. I'm not this and that. I mean, I see God at work in his life. I see God at work through his life. I see the power of God that has transformed his life in an unbelievable way. And I see gratitude flowing from his heart. And I see, you know, in the 12th step, it's all about basically taking what has been given to you and give it away to other people. And that's what he's doing. And that's what we're called to do. You know, the hope that we find in the grace of God, it's we become so transformed with it. We have such an incredible encounter and experience with God in our life that we can't help but want to give it away. And whenever I talk to Harold, he's either coming from meeting with somebody or going to meeting with someone and talking about, you know, the investment and commitment of time. That's huge. That's really what it's about, is just time with people. That's what's helpful. I love the quote that you gave, that trust is lost in buckets and gained in thimbles. Is that right? I mean, that's hard, but it's true. So I'll wrap up. I don't have a sermon this morning. I knew, Harold, I said, you got the balance of time this morning. But what I did is I went through the big book, the AA book, and pulled out some quotes that... you know, I had never read the AA book. And Harold said, you need to read that book. So you need to, Braden's going through it. I'm going through the steps with him. You need to know what we're doing. I'm like, all right. I was blown away. And if you haven't read it, it's good. It's good. It's encouraging. So here's a couple quotes. When was this book written? 30s?
About 100 years ago.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah. It starts off, a doctor's opinion. Dr. William Silkworth says this, in nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they're to recreate their lives. Right from the start. And this is a doctor's opinion, working with people who are struggling with alcohol. He just says, it's got to be beyond themselves. It's not possible to do this ourselves. And as you hear this, and as I hear this, you know, probably most of us are going to go, well, my struggle is not alcohol. But we all struggle with something. We're all junkies with something. And this applies to all of us, right? Bill's story. Bill's story. Bill returned from World War I and his drinking broke loose. And Bill says this. He got into the hospital. He said, I was totally separated from alcohol. I could not get alcohol because I was in the hospital. He said, I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly under his care and direction. I admitted for the first time that of myself, I was nothing. That without him, I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins and became willing to have a newfound friend, capital F, take them away, root and branch. I have not had a drink since. That's Bill's story. And then there's a subject line, we agnostics is what it's called. We agnostics, non-believers in God, but just kind of, I don't know if there's a God. This is what it says. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism or anything else that we struggle with, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We're here because we've realized that. We cannot save ourselves. You can't do it. I can't do it. We can't be good enough. We don't have what it takes. Lack of power was our dilemma, what it says. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? I go back to the verse that I opened up with this morning, Romans 1. I am not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God. The power of God. In AA, everybody starts, they don't name the name of Jesus. That, you know, that can really sidetrack a lot of people because a lot of people have a lot of different experiences with who Jesus is. But they just say, you just got to start with there's a power that's higher than you are, that has ability and the ability to overcome that you don't have, and you've got to seek out for that power. And one thing I love about AA that I've discovered in reading and talking with Harold and Braden and others is that they don't spoon feed you into a relationship with Jesus, but they put you on a path to go seek after God. And if and when that time comes where people come into a relationship with Jesus, it's because they were searching. It's not because other people were forcing it down their throat. It's because they were seeking after God and they found God in the person of Jesus. It's a beautiful journey that that AA really sets people on and helps them with. Under the agnostic, what was that? We agnostics, it says this. Remember that we deal with alcohol. And again, fill in the blank for you or for me. We deal with what? Cunning, baffling, powerful. It gets us when we least expect it. When we think we're on top of the mountain, we get ambushed. And then we're in the valley. We didn't see it coming. That's what they're saying. When, remember, we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful, whatever it is. Without help, it's too much for us. But there is one, capital O, who has all power. That one is God. And then it says, may you find him now. They know to accomplish, to overcome the things that we struggle with in life, it has to be beyond ourselves. And so, what is that? We go back to the gospel, the good news. And I'll wrap it up here. What is the good news? You know, Ray's got a t-shirt on, the good news. It says good news. A bunch of us have that t-shirt. And when I started wearing it, people would walk up to me and go, hey, what's the good news? I'm like, oh my goodness, I better have a quick answer for this. Oftentimes we bumble and stumble, you know. And my answer was, the good news is that while I was an enemy of God, while I was a sinner, Christ died for me and then made us friends of God. That's Romans 5. Christ died for us while I was an enemy and made me a friend of God. And then Isaiah 53 says this. This is 700 years before Jesus even walked the earth. And Isaiah 53 is a detailed prophecy of this Messiah to come, this Savior, this Rescuer. It says, he bore the sins of many and interceded for rebels. That's who Jesus died for, rebels. He died for bad people, not good people. If you think you're good, it doesn't apply to you. That's what Jesus saw the righteous, the Pharisees, the self-righteous, and said, unfortunately, I can't help you because you think you got it made and you don't. I mentioned a few weeks ago, you know, there are really two buckets of life that we live under, and we vacillate back and forth. I do. But one is, you know, kind of the umbrella of, I got it. I'm good. I don't need any help. And the other is, I need help. I need help. And when we live in that bucket, you know, whether it's you're struggling with any form of addiction, you're a player on a sports team, whatever, you go, hey, I need help. Coach, I need help. Would you help me? Would you coach me? Would you? It requires humility. It's really pride and humility. And so, but the gospel says, hey, Jesus didn't come for the self-righteous. He came for the humble. And that's good news. That's good news for us. The Bible tells us that we were lost, rebellious, and dead, separated from God, and condemned in our sins with no ability to save ourselves. And that's really bad news. But the good news is this, Ephesians 2. But God, in light of all that, but God, who is rich in mercy, because of his great love with which he loved us, made us alive with Christ even when we were dead in sin. It's by grace you've been saved through faith, and this not from yourselves. It's the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. If we're walking in relationship with Jesus and we're boastful and we're prideful and we're looking at other people like, you know, hey, I made a good decision to follow Jesus and you didn't. You know, I'm better than you. We have that attitude when we realize that he's the one that brought us in. He's the one that pursued us. You know, Harold's story, it goes all through Scripture where God, when we were resisting and rebelling, God will press us and crush us until we cry out, Uncle! I can't take it anymore. And when we do, he comes and he meets us with his love and with his grace. So how do we connect to that? How do we connect to that grace? How do we connect to that power that is available in Jesus? Well, they asked Jesus that. They said, what is the work of God? What do we do? What do we do? He said, this is the work of God. Believe in the one he sent. Just believe. That's good for us because we have no ability to do anything else. We can barely believe. And really the good news is even the belief that we have, the faith, is a gift from him. So that's good news for us today. Let me pray and we'll wrap it up. Father, thank you so much for this. This is a special time that you've given us this morning. I thank you for your work in Harold's life. I thank you for your work in all of our lives, for his willingness to be here, his transparency, his openness, his authenticity. Lord, may we be that way. That is the church. That's the church. That's who we're supposed to be. It's who we are. Just to be, to say, I don't have it all together. I need help. Thank you for the encouragement that you've given us through Harold's story. Lord, may we, those of us, and we all relate. Harold said, I don't feel worthy. I don't feel, we're not worthy. That's a good indicator. We're not worthy. And it's a recognition of our unworthiness that makes us worthy. Thank you for your love, for your grace that we find in Jesus. And we pray in his name. Amen.